Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the October 16th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and tonight our main focus will be on the Tudor United Sports Car Championship. First, some housekeeping news. For the past 3 months, I've tried to make this program work as a one-man show. When everything goes perfectly, it flows well. However, we all know that no live program ever goes perfectly, so there have been a few dead spots and a few repetitive questions. In order to help ease that a little and give the program more of a back-and-forth edge, I invited 19-year-old racer and friend of the program, Michael Mullally, to come on from time to time and provide her take on the issues at hand. Tonight will be her first episode as a color commentator of sorts. I'd like to give Michael a moment to introduce herself to the new listeners to the program and remind the past listeners of her racing experience. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. You ready to try something a little bit different for tonight's program?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Cool. Can you remind my listeners a little bit about your racing experience?
Well, I've been wheeling a race car for 5 years. I'm hoping that with a little help, I get to drive something bigger and faster next year, and I'm hoping to race a sprint car full-time.
Now let's get the show on the road and have some racing news about the Tudor Championship Series. 2014 marked the inaugural year for the championship, which combined the Grand-Am Rolex Sports Car Series and the American Le Mans Series, taking what could be argued to be the best of both up-and-coming series and coming up with a hybrid of sorts. This combination caused its fair share of controversy, and the balance of performance between the Daytona prototypes and the P2 cars led to more than a few heated discussions in the paddock. Recently, the series revealed the class structure breakdown for the next 3 years. The items of note include the extension of the prototype challenge class from 2015 to 2016, and perhaps more noteworthy, the adopting of full FIA spec GT3 cars for the GT Daytona class from 2016 onward.
The prototype class will continue to consist of Daytona prototypes, race cars built to LMPT P2 specifications per rules established by the Automobile Club 1 ACO, which governs the 24 hours of Le Mans, and the Delta Wing through 2016. A new globally unified prototype format for all three organizations will be introduced in 2017, with a planned vehicle life at least 3 years through 2019. The prototype class will continue to feature predominantly professional driver lineups while also allowing pro/AM driver combinations. The GTLM class adheres to GTE specifications established by the ACO. New GTE technical specifications will be introduced from the 2016 season with a planned vehicle life of at least 3 years through 2018. The class, which includes factory-backed teams from many of the most iconic automotive brands in the world, will continue to feature professional driver lineups while continuing to allow pro/AM driver combinations. The prototype challenge class will maintain its current format through 2016, with every team using OR-ECA FLM 09 chassis and 6.2-liter Chevrolet engine. Driver lineups will continue to require a mix of professional and amateur drivers. Beyond 2016, the class will be further evaluated once the vehicle design performance levels and costs is finalized for LMP3 and the new prototype referenced above. The GT Daytona class will utilize its current race cars through 2015. In 2016, the class will adopt full FIA GT3 specifications for all of its cars. Traction control anti-lock braking system and the full FIA GT3 aerodynamic specification will be allowed beginning in 2016. An adjustment of performance process will be managed through restrictors and weight. Driver lineups and GTD will continue to require a mix of professional and amateur drivers.
Our guests tonight will share their opinions not only on the announced class changes for now and the future, but will also give us a little more insight into the ins and outs of the first year of the Tudor Championship Series. Our first guest scheduled for the evening is Brian Sellers. A decade racer, he got his start racing go-karts in 1993 at the age of 11. He has been with Team Falcon Tire since 2009 and was the most recent class winner at the Petit Le Mans in the number 17 Porsche 911 RSR in the GTLM category. Settlers hasn't called into the program yet. So we're going to take a few minutes to discuss the racing in the Petit Le Mans. Did you happen to see any of the racing at the Petit Le Mans, and how do you think it went?
You know, I didn't see a whole lot of it, but I know that it's always a big race, and it's always fun to watch.
There was a little bit of controversy with Petit Le Mans this year, especially at the end. It had sort of the same sort of issue as the recent NASCAR race, where they didn't show the beginning of it on the air. For the Petit Le Mans, they actually delayed they were supposed to have the end of the race starting at 8:30 p.m. on, I think it was Fox Sports that covered it. But they ended up having a problem with the baseball running late. So instead of having the racing on at 8:30, they decided to have UFC fighting on from 8:30 until 10:30 at night, which I'm sure pissed off quite a few race fans, and I'm sure it didn't make the race teams happy after they found that out. That's not a very good way of keeping fans in the sport, especially when it's supposed to be on the air from 8:30 until, I think it was supposed to be 9:30, ended up being on from 10:30 till maybe like 11:15, something like that. So. And they didn't inform the people very well. It was just bad. And that just goes to show another issue we have with motorsports today, where it seems like they'd put anything on the air before they put racing on. They put UFC fighting. They preempt it with baseball. I think they preempt it with professional basket weaving if they had that on air. So it's just bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't like how they change, like, what station it's going to be on. Like, I think it should just be on one station, maybe another one, but for a lot of people, it's hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should change that.
Yeah, and they're not very good at informing the people, because even with the NASCAR race this past week, where they had the start of the race was on ESPN3, and it was supposed to be on ABC. And I don't know about you, but I don't get ESPN3 yet, because the AT&T hasn't quite worked that out in this area to get ESPN3 here. So it made that a little complicated, and it kind of threw off the whole rhythm of the race too.
Yeah. Now, I don't get ESPN3 either, but I know that it's really hard to follow and keep up with what channel it's going to be on every weekend.
Mm-hmm. Apparently there's a slight holdup with Brian Sellers going into the program. But we're going to hold on and wait for him now. He's been a pretty good friend of the program. I've worked with his promotion guy several times, doing articles for Examiner.com as well as for Speedway Digest. His promotion guy for Dark Horse Autosport has a long history of promoting different racing teams, and he's been very helpful in my burgeoning online career here. So hopefully Settlers will be on the program shortly.
Sounds exciting.
Doesn't it, though? What was your favorite part of the IMSA season this year?
I'm sorry, of the what? Sorry.
What was your favorite part of the Tudor Championship Series this year?
I really don't know. I think just watching, like, the new drivers and stuff get better and better and be able to outshine some of the older drivers, I think mm-hmm. that was probably my favorite part. What was your favorite part?
I don't know. I thought it was interesting that they took both the ALMS and the Grand Am Series and tried to make something of it. It definitely had its issues. My favorite part actually was just being able to see the drivers, actually meet a couple of them this year, because I've done a little bit of promotion work for some of them, and the Mazda Motorsports people were amazing at Daytona. I was actually able to ride along with them in their little golf cart, and Tristan Vautier and Tristan Nunez were serenading everybody who was listening, just singing as loud as they could before they got in the race car. So. That was wacky.
That sounds kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. But again, staying with Daytona, it was interesting at the race there. It was the first race of the season. It was the first race to have all the different classes combined together, and it didn't go as well as some of the teams had hoped, and I'm pretty sure it didn't go quite as well as the sanctioning body had hoped, because they had the extended yellow period in the early on in the race due to the accident between the Gainsco car and the other car. I believe it was a Ferrari, but I might be mistaken. And the driver for the Gainsco car still isn't quite up to snuff there. So hopefully he's on his road to recovery. I know he's got the best care in the world, but it showed that they still have some safety issues. They had a few training issues that they had to work out. So they had the whole season to work on, and it's improved throughout the year. They still had quite a few caution periods, more cautions than I think they expected for the racing. And I hope to get into that with Sean Rahal, who'll be another one of the guests on the program this evening, because it seems like the PC Challenge Class, the Prototype Challenge Class, was the cause of numerous accidents in the racing this year. And I want to see what his take is on the on that question.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. What's the worst accident that you've ever seen in your 5-year racing career?
The worst accident? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that hit walls and stuff, and you know that still has to hurt. But
yeah.
I would say the worst accident I've seen in my 5 years of racing was probably when I actually went to go around the car that had spun out, and I ended up hitting it, and then I don't even really know what happened, but the car flew up into the air and landed on the back of another car, and then it started smoking and stuff. So I think that's probably the worst accident I've seen. But, I mean, there's some crazy accidents that happen. It's kind of interesting, but, I mean, you feel bad. But I see why people go to watch the accidents, because there's some cool ones.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let's see if I can...
What about you? What's the worst accident you've ever seen?
I actually think I've seen a few at Daytona when we were there. A few years ago, they had the accident where Clint Boyer actually ended up on his roof going across the start-finish line. That was intense. That was a little insane, because we had the seats up in the sprint tower right above the start-finish line, and it was just banging and crashing, and Clint Boyer crossing the finish line on his roof. That was a bit much. But the one there in Daytona, I didn't actually see the whole accident. I just saw we were maybe 200 yards away from it. But when the Gainsco car came around the corner and it had passed another car, and then it just slammed right into the back of the car that was going really slow, and this car stopped. It went from about 100 miles an hour down to zero in 2 feet. So that's not a very comfortable thing.
No, I would imagine not. Wow, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try something different here. I'm going to try calling Brian Sellers and see if I can... I haven't used that function of the Blog Talk Radio studio yet, but his PR guy just let me know that he's having a problem calling in himself, so I'm going to try giving him a call and see how this works. Wish me luck. Well, that didn't work. Let's try one more thing. We've got a few more minutes until So our next guest is supposed to call in, but let's try one more thing here. Computer fun. Who's your favorite driver in the IMSA Tudor Championship Series?
Favorite driver, you know, really, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I don't follow that as much as I follow like NASCAR and stuff, but mm-hmm. I'm sure they're all really great. I wouldn't mind, you know, going to one of those races one day and experiencing something different than just regular circle track racing. But, you know, I don't really have a favorite driver.
I know they have a race, or they did have a race. I'm not sure if they're going to have it on their schedule for next year. I'd actually have to look that up. They had a race in Portland a couple of years ago for the Rolex Series. So that'd probably be the closest one to you.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think they did, because I think I remember looking up their schedule, because I was going to try and make it to one. I think it was,
mm-hmm.
I want to say it was last season, and then I discovered mm-hmm. that they did, actually, and I believe it was Oregon, and
mm-hmm.
anyways, I was too late, but yeah, so I think you're right. Yeah, I think hopefully they have it again, because I think that would be a great experience.
Trying the number one more time. It says dialing call completed. Hello, Brian, are you on the line?
Yes.
Cool. This is the first time I've tried to use the function to allow the Blog Talk Radio Studio to call a guest directly, and apparently it worked. So,
oh, good.
Thanks for coming on the program.
No problem. My pleasure.
How would you categorize the inaugural season of the Tudor United Sports Car Championship?
I would say it was good. I mean, I think when you look at the way the series started to the way it ended, it was all about progression. And I think when you first started the year, everybody knew that it would be an uphill battle from the beginning to the end, and that for it to be successful, it had to be an uphill battle, and that if people didn't have their struggles and their difficulties, that nobody was trying. And I think what you saw throughout the year were a lot of struggles and a lot of difficulties, but a lot of those were overcome. And I would categorize it as a success. I think we saw a lot of fans at a lot of races and a lot of good racing.
I'd like to congratulate you on your recent win at Road Atlanta at Deep Le Mans. And I was wondering if you're going to be able to parlay that into a good finish at the 24-hour race in Daytona.
Well, I mean, I hope so. I certainly hope so. In the past, we've been very strong in endurance races as a program, and Road Atlanta, I think, was another example of that. I don't think, however, that anybody is going to be taking it easy during the off season, and I think everyone will be on their toes to try and improve throughout the year, us included. And I hope that what Road Atlanta does for us is it gives us enough momentum moving into the off season to try and have a good race in Daytona. I think we should be strong there. I know we will be prepared to go there. So I think that's all we can kind of hope for. It was a great end to the season, and you can't start a season a better way than coming off of a win in the previous season.
What are your plans for the off season?
Well, at the moment, we're just kind of taking it easy and trying to stay fit. We have some testing that Falcon has planned, so for us, it's good. We're not stopping or shutting down. We're continuing to roll on from Petit Le Mans to our tests. And then also my wife and I will be expecting our first child this off season. So that will be, that'd be a new challenge all in itself.
I know your wife covers the NHRA races. Do you ever go to any of those, and have you ever competed in a drag race before?
I've never got to do any drag racing, but I have been to a few. Before she started covering, I'd been to one or two when I lived in Sonoma. And I've gone now to the Atlanta race a couple times when she's covered it. And it's amazing. I mean, I think those guys get a bad rap. People think that they're not drivers and that they just push the gas and they just go to the floor. And man, when you watch them in person, it's truly not the case. Those guys really drive those things, and I think it's a lot more difficult to get them to go in a straight line than what everybody thinks. So I have a lot of respect for them, and it's cool to watch. It's cool to see her. It's cool to see her commentate in that, and then to, you know, hear when she comes home, get to hear all the stories of the things that happened behind the scenes over the weekend.
What are your hopes for the 2015 season? Do you think that the series will, after the first year, do you think they have worked out some of their bugs, and is your team ready to go on to bigger and better things next year?
I think the series should be the least of everyone's concerns moving forward from what we've seen towards the end of the year. I mean, I think they're taking the steps in the right directions to try and fix the problems they have. And what we need to do now is kind of everyone needs to be able to focus on their own program and move forward and let the series address the issues that everyone's brought to them. Let them fix the problems and let them see if they can fix the problems before anyone starts to give them more crap, I guess. And I think that they will do that. They've proven that they want to do that. And I think, to answer the second part of your question, I think we will have a good year next year. We've ended the season, I think, stronger and closer than we ever have. I think it'll be still difficult. We have to do a lot of good work in the off season to keep up with everyone else's development. But I think that we'll be strong, and I think everyone at Falcon Tire is looking forward to the next kind of round of battles.
Now, my friend Michael has a few questions for you.
Well, first of all, congratulations on expecting your first child. That's really cool. Do you ever find time to still drive a go-kart?
I haven't been in a go-kart in a long time now. where I live in Atlanta, there's not a lot of access to track, so it's not so easy. I think it almost seems disgraceful to say, but it's probably been at least 5 years since I've driven a proper kart.
How many different race teams have you driven for in your career?
I've been fortunate enough to drive for a lot of really good race teams in my career, and off the top of my head, I'm not sure that I can guess appropriately, but I would say over the years I've driven for easy 10 separate programs, some in the same year, some in different years, but they've all been great programs in their own right. You know, it's been great. I've been able to drive for certainly teams like Falcon Tire, Fall Line Motorsports, TRG, PTG Racing, which is one of the greatest sports car teams of all time. Panos Motorsports. So I've been at a lot of programs, and I've been in a lot of really great programs and feel lucky to have done so.
Have you ever raced a circle track car or had any desire to?
I've never done any oval racing. I did at one point in time have some desire to try some, but to be honest with you, I love where I'm at so much right now that it's kind of my only focus and the only thing I really want to do. I love sports car racing, and I love being part of the team Falcon Tire that I'm with right now.
Do you have any rivalries or any past rivalries with some of the other drivers?
I bet you guys wish the answer to that one was yes. but probably no. I would say you always have some sort of small rivalries, but I don't think they're the same as like you see in sporting events where, you know, tonight's Thursday night football and the Patriots and the Jets are playing for, you know, against each other and there's the pure hatred there. I don't think we have those exact same rivalries. They certainly do exist, but I think what you see for us is you want to beat the team cars, the cars that are the most competitive with you. So for us, always we work well together with the factory cars and have a lot of respect for the Porsche factory program for Porsche North America, and they have a lot of respect for our program, but they're our judge and they're kind of our benchmark. So our goal is always to be better than them, and if we are able to do so, then we feel like we've done okay. But I don't know that I'd go as far as calling it a rival as much as a benchmark.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program tonight and wish you lots of success in the future and good luck with next season and lots of luck with your newborn kid.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Once again, that was Brian Sellers, the driver for the Falcon Motorsports car in the Tudor United Sports Car Championship. Our next guest is Sean Rahal. Sean started kart racing at the age of 7 and joined the Georgia Sprint Car Championship in the Yamaha Junior class in 2004. The following seasons, he also competed in the Florida State Championship and in the WKA Manufacturers Cup. Rahal won 2 championships in the 2007 Georgia Sprint Car Championship in the HPV2 and Rotex Junior classes. In 2013, he switched to sports cars. Racing for Comprehend Motorsports, the driver from Georgia won 6 races and scored 12 podium finishes out of 14 races. Rahal eventually won the championship by 4 points. He graduated the PC class of the American Le Mans Series for the 2013 Petit Le Mans. Partnering with Oswaldo Negri, the duo finished 2nd in class. For 2014, Rahal raced full-time in the United Sports Car Championship PC class. I'd like to welcome Sean Rahal to the program.
Hey, glad to be here.
Thank you for coming on. I know you suffered quite a hit at the Petit Le Mans. How are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm good. I actually just got back from an MRI. I've been in and out of the doctors all day, but they say I'm at least heading in the right direction, so that's a positive.
That's great. Good to hear that.
Yeah.
First.
Amazing.
Hmm. First off, the PC class has been roundly criticized by certain race analysts and other competitors as being sort of like the rolling chicane in the series. Do you think this is a fair criticism of the PC class?
I mean, to call it a rolling chicane in the series, I think is pretty kind of almost idiotic to say. If anyone said that, you know, you look at the car. That's the best paying for a buck that you can get, and it's the most affordable car for race teams to run. So first, you got to look at that. Second, you got to look at it's a very good car for a gentleman driver to pair up with a pro for a pro-am kind of class. And third of all, you got to look at the speed of it. To call it a moving chicane when it's faster than the GT Le Mans cars, that's a little bit difficult for us to say when we out-corner all the GT cars and in some corners are actually faster than Daytona prototypes. So there's a lot of criticism, I'd say, more from the Can-Am side. But, you know, this is a merger. We got to figure out how to, you know, appreciate all four classes because, you know, fortunately we have a great enough series, United Sports Car, to have that.
I know the PC class had its own race, had a couple of standalone races this year. Do you think that's a good idea, or how would you address the?
I say we didn't really, from a group of drivers' point of view, we didn't really like maybe Kansas or VIR where it was sprint races, but we did really enjoy Mazda Raceway where we got to race alone with the GTD cars. There's less cautions there, made for better racing, made for more of a, you know, not really a pit stop situation. It was kind of, you know, really everyone's performance throughout the race. So for us, I think a lot of the PC drivers enjoyed that, but I'd say sounds like they're going to do away with Kansas and VIR just because it didn't really work out in sprint format as we thought it should.
What would be your ultimate layout for the season? How many races do you think they should have, and how do you think that they should combine the different racing series?
I think right now we're looking at a perfect, we're kind of looking at a perfect series scenario, in my opinion, around 10 races. You know, that's good. You can't really have more than that, just budget-wise. You know, this stuff's expensive, unfortunately. And I'd say, you know, it's cool to have some races where you drop a class and you forget about traffic a little bit. But it's also cool to have, you know, the four big races with everyone there. So I'd say Tudor's done a really good job. If you look at the schedule for this up-and-coming 2015 United Sports Car Tudor season of, you know, kind of diversifying which classes go where. And, you know, they've kind of gave a little bit of a mix to it. But, you know, when you're talking Daytona, Sebring, the 6 hours of the Glen and the 10 hours of Petite, you got to have all the cars out there. You got to have a full grid for the race.
Are you excited about the new LMP3 class, and do you think that it will make its way into the IMSA in 2017?
I'll be honest with you on my end. I haven't really paid much attention to that car. I've been focused on the other endeavors that we're working on at 8-Star. You know, we obviously have the PC class and the PC car that we're probably planning on running till that new car comes out. I think that's a really good class, and I think the coupe idea of it is a good idea, but I can't really comment too much more on it because I just don't know about it.
Okay. What are your hopes for the 2015 season?
I'm hoping to get paired up and run the full 2015 season, although right now we're working hard. We don't have the driver lineup for sure for that next year. I'd say my main concentration really is going to be on Indy Lights because that's a new deal for me, and I really, really would like the chance to make it to IndyCar. So I'd say Indy Lights is going to be where my main focus is. I'm sure you can see me at the 24, and we're working on some things to get me in a car full-time, and hopefully that comes through. But if not, I think you can also find me in a couple races at the Continental Tire Series. Talked to Rebel Rock and a couple of other teams, and I seem to have found some opportunities to go drive in that series as well. So a little bit all over the place, but we're going to stay busy.
So you're planning on being in the Indy Lights next season? You're going to be at the race in St. Petersburg next year?
Correct, yes. Hopefully the whole season. We've got working on sponsorship right now, and it looks some things look promising for us. So we'll roll off here at the test on December 15th, and we'll see what we got in our 8-Star Motorsports machine.
Yeah, I love how IndyCar runs some of the races. The race in St. Petersburg is awesome because it goes from the first, for the fans anyway, because it starts first thing in the morning, and they've got racing that goes all the way, all 3 days of the weekend, and it's just the NASCAR and IMSA can take a few lessons from that.
Yeah, I can tell you also, I can't wait to hopefully run the 12-hour and just be stuck in Florida for 2 or 3 weeks. It kind of sounds like a dream month.
There you go. Now, my friend Michael has a few questions for you.
Okay.
Having raced quite a variety of cars, is there another type of racing you'd be interested in trying out?
I'm really interested in actually sprint car racing. I said that a lot more before I got this bad concussion at Petit, but I've actually had some interest for some people to put me in a dirt sprint car. Also, you know, help prepare for Indy Lights. You know, it's one of the engineers' favorites to have drivers do that to get car control. I've been on dirt a couple times, but I'd say, you know, I really want to make it to IndyCar, but I would actually like to do some dirt racing along the way. I've done open wheel, stock car, pretty much everything except actually a dirt race.
Do you feel you have any weaknesses when it comes to racing? If so, how do you overcome them?
I'd say probably a weakness that I had to begin with this year was making the step from chasing a dream to a career. That's just something that young drivers, you know, struggle with of, you know, transferring all this dreams and hopes and wanting to go fast and adrenaline and to making a business side of it. And I'd say I struggled with that maybe up until April. But the key is to have good people around you and figure out which good people around you are really, you know, there for you and take advice from them and, you know, not ever, you know, shut your ears off to people who want to help you. A lot of times in racing, people aren't going to talk to you unless they have something to say in your respect. Otherwise, they'll just kind of ignore you. So you always got to be open-minded and not take it as criticism, but take it as advice.
If you could change anything in the world of motorsports, what would it be?
I would give as much funding as I can to 8 to 10 talent level drivers. I just wish that there was unlimited funds so, you know, a lot of us drivers could just go out there and be based just raw on talent. But, you know, right now sponsorship and economy is hard, so a lot of it's chasing sponsorship, unfortunately. But I'd say my dream would just be for you know, everyone to have kind of an unlimited budget and everyone go have fun and enjoy themselves.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program and wish you lots of luck in your recovery from your concussion and hope to see you do really well in Daytona in next year.
Awesome. It was a pleasure to be on. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Our last guest of the evening is Tom Long. Tom started his racing career in grassroots sports car racing with showroom stocks and spec Miata classes. He quickly took a liking to lightweight sports cars, setting multiple track records and winning championships while competing in the SCCA runoffs with podium results. Tom went on to win the 2005 Amata MX-5 National Championship before moving into the Can-Am Continental Tire Series in 2006. By 2007, Long was on the steps of the Can-Am podium, winning his first race in the series at home track of Virginia International Raceway in 2009. For 2010, Long was a regular in both the Can-Am Rolex and Continental Tire Series, winning multiple races and a top five result in the championship. 2011 and 2012 have been Long's most celebrated results to date, leading several hours of the 2011 Daytona Rolex 24-hour and going on to a podium finish with Dempsey Racing's Mazda RX-8. While also finishing runner-up in the 2012 Continental Tire Series ST Championship. Currently, Long is a factory driver with the all-new Mazda SkyActiv-D Clean Diesel Prototype Program in the IMSA Tudor United Sports Car Championship Series. Tom also continues to serve as a part-time driver for Freedom Autosport, a top Mazda team in the IMSA Continental Tire Series. In his off weekends, Tom works as a professional driving coaching instructor with the BMW Performance Driving School and Skip Barber Racing School organizations. He is also a house coach for the VIR club members driving events. Tom graduated from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte in 2004 with a degree in business marketing. I would like to welcome Tom Long to the program. Hey, Tom, and thanks for holding.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me.
First off, I'd like to say the Mazda SkyActiv prototype is an amazing example of racing design and engineering that seems to have been plagued by mechanical gremlins throughout 2014. Do you think you've worked out most of the bugs and you're ready to be a contender for next season?
Yeah, it certainly is a beautiful car, and I think, you know, from the advancements we've made through the season and what we're planning on for the off season this winter, or I call it an off season, it really isn't much of an off at all, but certainly we're working hard, and, you know, if you look at it from a percentage standpoint, starting at Daytona to where we ended this season at Road Atlanta at Petit Le Mans, I think we're certainly getting there. The team's working really hard, and I'm excited for next season. I think there's a lot of changes that will help us get there, and we're going to be close.
Which racetracks do you think the Mazda performed best at in 2014?
Well, the first that comes to mind, and probably where we had the best shot at a top result, was ironically at Mazda Raceway. You know, that circuit just kind of exudes exactly what Mazdas are good at, is that momentum handling and braking capability. So, you know, we found ourselves running really, really strong there, and a few other tracks along the way since then that we've been pretty close on pace. And, you know, like I mentioned, towards the end of the year, we were getting, from sector times, we were getting pretty close, especially in the handling sections as we work on our handling down the straightaways next year.
What's your favorite track that you compete at in the series?
Going back, you know, I've got to think Mazda Raceway is definitely up there. It's just, not only the circuit is just amazing and incredible, and all the history from that area and that circuit, but you know, there's other great ones, of course, that love Watkins Glen. Just a beautiful area of the country, and a really incredible circuit to race at, but there aren't too many bad ones, you know, so we're lucky and fortunate in that regard.
How can you compare the driving in the Mazda RX-8 to, as opposed to the prototype? What are the similarities, and how are they different?
Well, it's definitely a few similarities. You know, again, the RX-8 was a really lightweight, nimble GT car compared to some of the other manufacturers, Chevy and Ford and Porsche's GT cars. So both are that lightweight, nimble, well-handling, great braking capability. But on the differences, you couldn't have a more different sound. That's for sure. Yeah. The RX-8 was very unique in, you know, how that three-rotor screamed and kind of threw flames out the exhaust, and just a really cool sensory feeling, where the active diesel is very, very quiet. You kind of just hear the air whisking by as it rockets by you there. So definitely different on that perspective, and also, of course, on the revs. You know, the RPM is probably about half as much on the on the Skyactiv diesel engine as it was on the RX-8.
I know a couple of years ago you did some racing for Dempsey Racing. Do you think that Patrick Dempsey has been a plus for the series? And do you think he's a true racer, or just a guy who pretends to be a race car driver in his spare time?
Yeah, that was some really special years, having the opportunity to race with Patrick Dempsey and the organization. You know, he is such a true gentleman, a great guy, just a well-rounded human being. And, you know, his passion for motorsports is probably arguably second to none. And I think he is a great ambassador for the sport, because he really connects with another level or a different surrounding of folks than just Motorhead race fans. And so I think he probably has drawn people that might not have ever watched sports car racing or appreciated it to become a fan of it, because of the way he's able to kind of explain and share his experiences from that. So, and he's definitely, you know, focused on it. He went from where my role was to to drive whenever he couldn't make the race. And so maybe 5 or 6 times a year I'd be get the call to drive for the team, where now he in this past season drove full time. So definitely he's making an honest go at it and continues to develop.
How do you think IMSA's done with the balanced performance this year? And do you think the diesel power was a help or hindrance for the Mazda program in 2014?
Well, I think, you know, when you get a series combining like you did with Grand Am and the ALMS, I think, of course, you know, everybody's going to take their best guess. IMSA is going to try to put their best foot forward in figuring out what the rule set needs to be on a commonality basis. But there's going to be adjustments throughout the year, and that's to be expected, and it should happen. And so that's what they did, and they continued to dial it in and get it closer. I think you saw some phenomenal racing, especially in the GT categories, how close the manufacturer battles were and the teams racing. And then on the prototype side, well, it is a little bit of a different beast because you do have those high horsepowered ground-pounding Daytona prototypes with the very light, nimble P2 cars. So so I think they're still going to keep refining that as they go. But, it kind of comes back to what I'm used to with multi-car, multi-class racing, where you have certain cars that are going to perform better at certain racetracks, just inherently the type of car they are. And that's kind of what happen this year, and they'll continue to do better as they go.
Now, Michael has a few questions for you.
Being a BMW Performance Driving School instructor, what same skills do you use to maneuver your way around the racetrack?
Well, I think, you know, no matter what school, driving school, racing school that you go to, I think one of the biggest items, and this goes for driving or racing or anything to do with cars, is vision and your eyes. And so, you know, we always are talking about where you look is where you go. And so looking in the right place, whether you're trying to avoid an incident or you're trying to come out of a skid or, you know, whatever type of car control things you're trying to work on in a driving school environment to become a better driver. Same thing that goes on the racetrack. And, of course, you know, if you're looking too close to the front of the car, not far out in front of you, you know, you certainly will not be as smooth and as quick. So those definitely, those skills are common for sure between the two.
What is the fastest you've ever had the luxury of driving in a race car?
Well, I'd say that definitely would have to be at Daytona. You know, from the bus stop there to all the way around back to the tri-oval at start-finish, it's got to be somewhere, believe it or not, in the GT cars were a little bit quicker because they had less aerodynamics, which would keep us from you know, being so glued to the ground there as we go faster. So I'd say somewhere up in the range of 190 or so, probably, which is doesn't feel like 190 sometimes when you're, you know, you got that wide banking at Daytona like that. But you cover a lot of distance in a short period of time, that's for sure.
Wow. Do you have anything that you do to prepare for race day?
Oh, absolutely. Couple things. I think it's first off, it starts out with proper nutrition. As far as kind of like any sports athlete, having a kind of a carb-heavy dinner the night before, pasta dinner is always a good start to the day for energy and. With our endurance racing that we do, you know, it's not sometimes only one stint in the car we'll do for an hour or 2 hours, but we'll maybe, like at Petit Le Mans, have to go back in to do another couple hours. And so really calling on your energy resources to dig deep and and to you know, have to perform for many, many hours on end, that's vitally important. Hydration is another critical thing, of course. The race cars get very hot, and you're doing a lot of physical exertion, and so you know, between having the proper energy and hydration, I think those are two critical things. But other than that, no crazy rituals from the standpoint of like having any putting one sock on one side versus the other or anything, or nothing like that, which I think probably is probably good. It keeps the mind focused on what we need to do.
I know you mentioned that you've got a lot of off-season testing going on this year. Are you how much of that testing will you be doing at Palm Beach International Raceway, and how do you feel about that track?
Yeah, certainly that is the home track for Speed Source Engineering that runs the Mazda SkyActiv program for Mazda, and just an hour up the road from the shop there, and we will be doing quite a bit of testing, not only at Palm Beach, but also, you know, through some of the other tracks we'll be running on in the spring. So really, you know, like that track. I think it's a great test facility for many reasons. It's got a lot of great cornering, like long duration type corners, and it also has a nice long straightaway with some good braking opportunities. So we really get to play with all aspects of the car there, and the lap ends up going by at a rate of which we can make many laps in a run and start to figure out some repeatability, rather than it being a, say, if it was a 5 or 10 mile lap or something like that. It's hard to really gauge a measurement when something's so big like that. So it's perfect for what we're looking for, especially with it being so close by.
That's a good thing. I wish that they'd had more. They have more professional races on the road course there, because I've seen a few years ago, my father and I went and saw the ARCA race there, and that was an amazing race. And it's just it's not good that they don't. They know they have a few SCCA races, but I think they should do more national events there. It'd be an awesome thing for Palm Beach County.
Yeah, I remember. I think the last national event I went to was 2 seasons ago. It was the first year of the SCCA majors. They had they always had the double at Sebring, and then they did the double at Palm Beach, which is always really incredible to think about. You had 4 major races in the span of, 10 days. so that was really neat, and that always got a good turnout. But for the future, I think it's quite a facility with so many different aspects of motorsport being available right there on one site, one facility.
Well, I thank you very much for coming on the program. Wish you lots of luck next season. Have fun testing in Palm Beach here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and looking forward to next season. Take care.
Thank you very much. Once again, I'd like to thank Brian Sellers, Tom Long, and Sean Rahal for taking time out of their busy schedules to join me in the Thunderdome. Next week, we'll be welcoming Tom Long's teammate and friend of the program, Tristan Nunez, back for another round of questions concerning the future of sports car racing in America. I'd also ask him a couple of horse racing questions, because he did recently win the Sunshine Stakes horse racing event here in Delray. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at radio.speedwaydigest.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I'd also like to invite you to read my nearly daily articles covering all aspects of motorsports at speedwaydigest.com. In addition, I'd really like to thank Michael Mullally for helping me out with questions and analysis from a racer's perspective. Hopefully she'll be able to join me from time to time to add her voice to the discussion of some of the issues surrounding modern motorsports. How did you enjoy the program this evening?
You know, it was really cool. I mean, I've been to, like, NHRA races and stuff, but it was really, it was really cool to, I don't know, I guess hear from, like, other professional drivers that, you know, race, you know, like, I don't know how to put it. But, I mean, it was really a great experience. I'm glad that I got to help you out with this, and it was an awesome experience, and I'm glad I got to talk to them. That was really, really cool. I don't think I'll ever be able to top this.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully you'll be able to come back at some point in the future.
Thank you.
Well, this concludes the episode 14 of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I thank you very much for listening, and look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome.